For members only, Golf Smarter number 306, published on November 8, 2011.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
New clubs or new grips and shafts with Jesse Ortiz.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, Jesse.
Hey, thanks for having me on again.
It's been such a long time since we spoke. It's so fun because, you know, the Golf Smarter members know what's going on, and we just set it up that, listen, we're just going to continue to record. So I want to continue the conversation we were having, and you know, in talking about the tri-metal fairway wood that you created and changed the industry. Now, when that club hit the marketplace, what year about was that? Around?
That was 1998.
Okay. So just around that time, I was just starting to play golf. I've not played for a tremendous amount of time. I was just around that time that I was starting. I had heard of that club and not even been interested in the golf industry. I mean, I knew, you know, what that club was.
I think what made the whole Orlemar phenomenon a phenomenon, the whole story a phenomenon, wasn't just the product. It was a real human interest story. It was a story of a 37-year family business of craftsmen that were steeped in an industry or in a tradition of hand-making clubs, and overnight, it seemed, it became a leader in metal wood design. And I think that was, it was a real human interest story. That's really what it was. Not only was it that the product was way ahead of its time versus all the giants in the industry, it was that the sea change of design had come from a very unlikely source. And it was a real human interest story, a father and son struggling, known for making woodwoods, and now all of a sudden they had a club that within 100 days of its introduction was the number one club or number one fairway wood on all the tours.
Wow.
And nobody was getting paid to play it. I mean, it was just an unbelievable story, and one that will never ever happen again. You know, today there's just so much money on the tour for visors, for shoes. I mean, I think guys are getting paid for the color of their shoelaces. You know, everyone's getting paid for something, you know, whether it's your wedge, your putter, your hat, you know, all of that. And 14 years ago, a product came out, and, you know, the big companies were not paying for every item in the bag. It was, well, you're getting paid for drivers, or you got paid for the whole thing, top to bottom, hat through shoes and your driver through your wedge. But, you know, if you had a real innovative product, the pros would use it, and it didn't matter if they didn't get paid. Today, they don't use anything that they don't get paid for. It's just changed, and the big companies really learned something. We were talking in a previous episode of, you know, the things that I changed in the industry, and, you know, that is one of them. Never again will a club become number one on the tour without anyone getting paid. I mean, you know, everyone's getting paid to use clubs, and that just never happened before and will never happen again, that something gets to number one and no one is getting paid to use it. It's the big companies learned that they cannot let a small company come up with something extremely innovative and get it out on tour, get its use, you know, extensively out there. They pay to lock out. In a lot of respects, they pay to lock out the innovation.
Interesting. Coincidentally, as we have this conversation, we're recording this the day after Steve Jobs passed away. And I guess that you would understand what he's been through. I mean, here's somebody who's I loved with what President Obama said about that. Most people heard about the effect of the impact of this man is that most people heard about his passing on a device that he created.
Yeah, it's just a very sad story. His passing. You know, I never met him. You know, he was here in the area. A lot of the Silicon Valley leaders are golf nuts, golfers, and I've met quite a few of them. But Steve, I don't believe played golf. I never met him, but he was, you know, a tremendous genius at knowing what people wanted. As they say, he knew what people wanted before they even knew what they wanted. So it's a brilliant genius of a man and someone who was always in tune with the consumer, always put the customer, the consumer, ahead of everything. And, you know, it's very sad.
And where you kind of stumbled upon a product that changed the industry, he seemed to be manufacturing that. He seemed to plan that. He seemed to know what was going to make that change, which is a vast difference. What kind of impact did the success of the Tri-Metal Fairwaywood have on the Orlemar company? I mean, you must have gone from a little small family-run business to a global sensation overnight.
Well, we went from 6 family employees to 155 people in about 9 months.
Wow.
We went from about $1.5 million to 105 in 18 months. And there were a lot of growing pains. You know, I think, you know, there was a quote today in the paper about Steve Jobs who, you know, said, gee, the probably the best thing that ever happened to me was getting fired from Apple because, you know, he says that he went from the immense pressure of being successful and staying successful to being thrown out of his own company and having the relief that he could start all over and begin. It kind of rejuvenated him. And in a lot of respects, that and to a much lesser degree, it happened with me. You know, the company got extremely big, and we were very strong for several years, and then you bring outside people, and they think a little differently, and you can't do what you want to do, and so I had to start all over, and that's when I started, you know, Bobby Jones Golf. But it's a story that repeats itself very often, where an entrepreneur comes up with a great idea, the company gets big, the company seems to outgrow the entrepreneur, and then you've got to start all over. It's tough. It is tough staying on top. And as a private company in the golf equipment industry, Fred, it's very difficult to stay on top because you become a target. And if you look around, virtually all the equipment companies in golf are public companies. And when you come up with something innovative, people will copy it and they'll steal it and they'll shoot you down. And it was a real awakening for me to go from a very small company to, you know, to something that was very big and becomes a target. And it was hard for us to hold on to it.
Yeah, he left, then he came back and made it even bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And listen, if it wasn't for Steve Jobs, you and I would not be talking to one another because podcasts all happened once iTunes came on the scene and people started doing podcasts. And I started doing this back it was almost a few months after podcasts occurred. The creation of that, I started doing this podcast, and actually, when the first Macintosh came out in October of 1984, I bought one in November of 1984, and I've been a Mac fanatic ever since. So, always been a big fan of Apple and defender of Apple during very difficult times to defend them. But talk about the last laugh. But let's talk about Okay, that's my moment.
But he was really, he was an incredible genius just to see that, you know, what the computer industry could do. Like I think the real breakthrough was his vision of what computers could do in the entertainment business or in the entertainment industry. You know, who was thinking, you know, who would have dreamed that your computer would be the main drive to you enjoying, or to all of us enjoying music? You know, I mean, wow, wait, I thought a computer is just supposed to be, you know, like an electronic file cabinet or something like that. I mean, right. You know, he was able to take music and make it very much a part of our everyday experience, and how you get the music, and you know what he did at Pixar. You know, it was just that was just incredible. You know, he just took the vision and just exploded it. And as we were saying before, entertainment, no matter how tough times get economically, people are always looking to be entertained. You could actually make an argument that when times are tough, more people are going to the movies or listening to music to kind of check out of the reality of how tough things are, how sour the whole, you know, the whole economy is. And I think that was where Steve's real genius was, is in that vision of bringing entertainment so close into people's lives and so accessible. It was just incredible.
Yeah, I remember, you know, it's like those things in your life you remember, like the Kennedy assassination, the Challenger explosion. I remember when watching the Macworld keynote address that Steve gave when he started introducing the concept of the digital hub, that the computer was the digital hub of our entertainment world. And it was like, whoa, never thought of that. Wow. Wow. And it makes me laugh because I remember when I drove off to college, when I moved from Southern California to Northern California, I had a trailer hooked up to my Pinto. And I had a Pinto with a hatchback, so the seat folded down. So, and it was filled with stereo gear and records. I was a radio guy. Yeah. I was in music, right? I had hundreds and hundreds of records. I had speakers the size of a small child, right?
Yeah.
And then I had my cassette deck and my reel-to-reel deck and my turntable and my amplifier, right? All this stuff. And when my younger son went off to school, he had more music and a better sound system in his pocket.
Yeah, exactly right.
Right? And even this morning I was watching Tom Brokaw on the Today Show talking about that when he grew up, he was a jukebox fan. He loved jukebox. He reached in his pocket and pulled out the iPod Nano, which is the size of a watch face, and he said, "This is my jukebox." So completely changed it.
Completely.
Okay, golf. Right, sorry.
No, you know, I think that's what's great, is that we can talk about a lot of different subjects and hopefully it's entertaining to your members here.
Well,
you know?
Yeah,
not just golf. We don't live by golf alone, you know. Just in fact, I was going to do a little blog or show in the next few weeks on our website. I keep doing, you know, it's always golf and tips and stuff like that. And I'm going to try to get up to my buddy's vineyard in Kenwood, California, which is in Sonoma County, and because the grapes are being picked now, so I'm probably going to go up in the next several days, and we'll take a little camera and shoot, and I'll be, not only will I be just talking a little golf, people will see that my other passion's wine and making it. So, you know, the fact that we can do a lot of different things hopefully is entertaining to your members there.
Right, and we don't have to break for traffic and weather.
Yeah,
I want to talk to you about in the previous episode we were talking about how it's difficult to innovate now and to separate yourself from your competition, and I've noticed that you have chosen to do that. One of the ways you've chosen to do that is through your alliances, and you, like Dave Pelz, for example.
Yeah, working with Dave, I worked with Dave at Orlemar 10 years ago working on wedges. You know, what I try to do, Fred, is create products that are very different. You know, it's easier said than done, but, you know, the wedge is an example. It's the only wedge that has a face insert. I think TaylorMade has one, but it's interchangeable. It can pop out and it wears out. But ours is permanently affixed to the face of the wedge because Dave, over the years, realized that the wedges wore out very quickly. And, you know, when you're on tour, those guys are changing wedges every other week, every third week. They've got a brand new set of wedges. The average golfer don't get their wedges free. So it would make sense to invest in a club that is your, you know, one of your main scoring clubs and invest in one that won't wear out, because there is a significant difference in spin. Once a wedge starts to wear out, the edges of the grooves wear out, and most wedges are made out of very soft metal to give you a good feel, but that soft metal works against you because it wears out quicker, and then your shots don't bite like they should, and you start losing strokes. So my association with Dave goes back about 10, 11 years, and he's a great guy, great guy to work with, very, very knowledgeable, and there's a real science behind the wedges that we've created.
I would think that in golf, from what I've witnessed, old wives' tales seem to dictate purchases more than anything. As you were talking about the face of wedges, I've heard people say that, oh, if your wedge gets rusty, it's even better. You know, it's like what? And is that, what does that mean? Is that true?
Well, you know, there's people who believe that what happens is rusting is really the deterioration of the surface of the metal. And since the surface will deteriorate, it means it gets more porosity. The porosity or roughness then would put more spin on the ball. That's the theory. But in reality, what happens is, yes, as the face starts to rust or get a little more porous, the score lines and the edges of the score lines dull or wear out much quicker. So losing the sharpness or the edges of the score lines is by far worse. Or it's, how can I say it? It reduces the spin much more than the advantage of keeping the rusted face. I don't know if I've made myself clear, but, you know, the rusted face is the deterioration of the skin or the surface of the metal, and that's just when a club face starts to rust, the actual edges of the score lines wear out much quicker. So you're really losing more than gaining when your face starts to get rusty.
We can easily spend 30 minutes talking about the face of a wedge, I'm sure, because we've just launched here, but you talked about your face, you know, the insert that they put on is replaceable, but yours is permanent. But does that mean that your score lines and the face of it keeps? Explain this to me. Where are we going?
Well, obviously, Fred, if you use a metal on the face of a club that is extremely durable, it's going to provide more spin longer. All wedges spin about the same when they're brand new. Again, even, you know, what we were talking before about the velocity off the face with a metal wood, you know, that's how it's regulated by the USGA. Well, even the score lines and the edges of the score lines, all of that is regulated by the USGA also. So pretty much all wedges spin about the same when they're new. What happens is as the face starts to wear out, the more you practice, and you can just imagine, you know, a sand wedge, you know, all wedges are really used in environments where there's a lot of abrasion, you know, whether it's the sand, sandy soil, that all that happens, and it deteriorates the face of the club and reduces the spin, which reduces performance. All wedges spin about the same when they're new, but once they start wearing out, then the soft metal really starts getting a lot less spin. So if you've got a wedge that's 2 or 3 years old, it's probably spinning 30% or 40% of what it was when it was brand new. Our wedge won't wear out as quickly. So you can have the wedge for 5 or 6 years and it's spinning like everybody else's wedge was, you know, within 6 months of its use or of peeling it out of the plastic. So, you know, keeping your wedges, the sharpness of your score lines is very, very important. The guys on tour, they don't worry about that. They get free wedges every 2 or 3 weeks. It doesn't matter. The average golfer, that becomes a problem.
And some companies have different, I want to say colors, but that's probably not right, different metals that are different shades on their wedges, like the gunmetal and then just a silver metal. Are those contributions just cosmetic, or do those have an impact on your game?
Those are mainly cosmetic. Plating of the wedges is a surface treatment, and it may have a little bit of an effect, Fred, when they're brand new, but within 4 or 5 months, the finish has worn somewhat on the face, and it really doesn't impart any difference in spin. You've really got to make a material change to keep the metal so that it won't wear out. You know, we use a type of metal that comes from Pennsylvania, Carpenter Metals out of Pennsylvania. They make a special steel that's very difficult to grind. It's almost like a tool steel, and then it's heat treated, so it's very, very tough. Most wedges are all one piece, and they're made out of carbon steel, which is extremely soft. It's great for feel, but within 6 months, your club isn't spinning close to what it was before. So we just believe that we put the special metal that's very hard, very durable, but we put a bonding material behind it. It's a polymer made by 3M, and it actually absorbs the shock of hitting the ball. So even though the face material is very tough and very hard, it feels soft because the polymer actually acts like a shock absorber. So the wedges feel like they're forgings, but the face material won't wear out.
Let me try to create what I believe to be the golf smarter listener. And he's a golf consumer, or she, sorry. So this is a person that plays golf, let's say, 25 to 30 times a year. They are smart enough to know that they need to get fitted for clubs, so they go get fitted and follow the recommendations and buy a set of irons that that fit their game, that fit their swing, that fit their body type with the correct shafts. And they also, well, they make the mistake of not buying some Bobby Jones golf wedges, but they buy wedges now that are not necessarily part of that set of clubs that they just purchased. Should they be purchasing wedges more often than their irons? Should they be changing those wedges based on that kind of play?
Yes. Yeah, they should. I mean, I really believe that wedges should be looked upon in the same light as hybrids and or a driver or a particular fairway wood. You know, I think the last thing you want to do is buy a set of irons and they come with two or three wedges and, gee, I bought them because it was part of the set. You know, I think you really have to look at your scoring clubs, which would be your putter, and look at your wedges. And Dave Pels would say you need to have at least three wedges, if not four, and just, you know, buy the wedges that suit your game. Take a look at how does the club look. Does it look, we talked about confidence before, does the club look like it's easy to hit? Does it look like it's easy to control? Feel is important. Just because a set of wedges comes with a set of irons, you know, I think that's the wrong reason to pick up the set of wedges. The wedge category should be as separate as your hybrids. Just like when you're buying a set of irons now, sometimes there's hybrids that are part of the set. I think that's crazy. I think you really need to look at your hybrids as a whole other category from your five to say, 9 or pitching wedge. Your hybrids should be looked upon as long iron replacements. And just because a company makes a set of 5-through pitch that works for you doesn't necessarily mean that the hybrids that they want to sell you in that set are right for your game. And so, you know, just again, Fred, just because you buy one company's driver doesn't mean, gee, you're going to go out and buy their 3-wood and their 5-wood. You know, the driver may work for you, but there are companies that may have a type of a fairway wood that's better suited to your game. Take a look at the pros bags. Even though a lot of them are signed, or almost all of them are signed from one company, they may not have the driver through wedge of that company's most latest line or model. They may have a driver that's their brand new, you know, the brand new driver of the company they're endorsing, but the 3-wood might be a model that's 6 years old, 7 years old. They may have wedges of that company, but those wedges aren't the latest models. They might be one from last year. So, you know, I always tell people, mix and match. Go out and research all the clubs that are out on the market before you purchase. And just because you've got a mixed bag doesn't mean that you've failed. Everyone needs to pick out what works for them, what looks good to them, what sounds good to them, what feels good to them, and that's how they'll play their best golf.
And should you be obviously changing grips on an annual basis at the very least, right? If you're playing 30 times a year, you should be looking at your grips every year. But what about shafts? Do those wear out as well?
No, shafts don't wear out. You know, actually, there's been a lot of technology in shafts in the last several years. One of our most popular shafts in the last 2 years, Fred, has been this move to Superlight, which, you know, all the real big shaft innovations have been coming out of Japan for well over a decade. And, you know, there's this whole, I would say, movement of sub-50-gram shafts that really help most golfers. I mean, if you're a golfer who's 50 years old or older, and, you know, you've lost a little bit of distance, you really should take a look at these super light shafts that are either 40 or 45 grams. You know, there's a lot of hocus-pocus in this industry, Fred, and everyone's always touting, gee, we've made our driver longer, you know, you hit it further, get 10 more, 20 more yards, you know, this new shape, this new design we've got is going to give you more distance, and it's all a bunch of baloney. At the end of the day, the only way you're going to get more distance is to swing a club that's lighter faster. You've got to increase club head speed, and one of the ways to increase club head speed is to swing a club that's much lighter. Another way is to swing a club that's longer, because the longer the shaft is, the more club head speed you get. So if you can get a driver shaft that weighs 40 grams and is 46 or 47 inches long, just with your normal swing, you're going to pick up about 5 miles an hour, which for many people gets them about 15 more yards. So,
in which direction, though?
Well,
I mean, because Tom Wishon will tell us, coming and going, that longer drivers, and some of these drivers are too long for most people. That's not really the...
No, he's right. Super light technology is not for everyone. But for the golfer who hits the ball already relatively straight, but just has lost distance, the longer shaft is the way to go. For a lot of golfers, you know, I always tell people, hey, look, you got a mirror at home? Go look in the mirror and be honest with yourself. I mean, if you're out there and you're missing, you know, 3/4 of your fairways, you know, off the tee, then a longer club isn't going to work. But I run into a lot of golfers that are older, in their mid-60s, early 70s, and they hit the ball relatively straight. They're almost never in trouble. They can get away with a club that's longer because they hit the ball pretty much in the center of the face all the time. They just have lost club head speed.
Sure.
Now, if you're not in the fairway often, then a longer club is a disaster. But what you can do is you can get the super light technology and make it shorter. Make the club 44 inches of the driver. Hit it in the center, but you'll still pick up club head speed because you're going to be swinging a club that's probably 40 grams lighter, even though 40 grams lighter than your original driver, and you will pick up distance. Because if you put a light grip on the club, you're shifting the balance point more to the head. So golfers have to be honest with themselves. If you hit the ball pretty straight, you can get away with going longer. If you can't, if you're missing fairways, go shorter, but still think about a club that's got more weight in the head and take the weight out of the shaft and the grip.
These super light shafts. Now, I know that where does this fall from a graphite shaft, super light shaft, metal hybrid, not hybrid shaft, a composite, right? I know that.
You're right.
Where do all these lie in what we should be looking at towards our game?
Well, typically, a normal graphite shaft in the past weighed about 60 to 70 grams. Normally, Fred, a hybrid shafts tend to be a little heavier. They tend to be in that 70 to about 85 gram range. I'm talking specs for the average golfer, not the guys on tour. The guys on tour, if they've got a hybrid shaft, it could be, you know, about 90 to 100 grams.
But yeah, I'm never talking about guys on tour. I'm always talking about us recreational golfers. Wait, when you say a hybrid shaft, you mean a shaft for a hybrid or?
That's right.
Okay.
A shaft for a hybrid typically is around 70 to 85 grams, right around there. Fairway wood shafts tend to be, you know, in that 65 range to maybe 75 range. Graphite shafts for drivers have typically been, for the average golfer, somewhere in that 55 to 65 gram range. You know, if you're a stronger player, you're probably in the 70 gram range or something like that. Super lights are in the 40 to 45 gram range, and they're much, much lighter. They're more delicate. But because the shaft is lighter, you've got a club that the overall weight is lighter. When you couple that light shaft, Fred, with a light grip, typically a grip will weigh around 50, 52 grams. There are some grips on the market now that weigh about 25 grams. So if you typically had a 65 or 70 gram shaft, and now you go down to 45 grams, you know, you've lost 20 grams or so just in the shaft. If you take the 52-gram grip and change it to the 25, now you've lost another 25 grams. So, you know, you can lose about 40, 45 grams in total weight. And what it does is without increasing the weight of the head, you've moved the balance point more towards the head. So now you've got a club that's got, you know, the balance point's down at the head more. So, you know, it's not more mass, but the balance point at the head, you feel the head more. You're swinging, even though the club is much lighter, you feel the head of the club throughout the swing much better than with the heavier shaft. You make better contact, and you pick up some yardage. So that's really where shafts fall into. Usually, you know, I gave you the weights of each category, and you know, super light technology is not for everybody, but if you're 50 years or older, it's definitely something you should try out.
And what is the material of these super light? Could these be graphite and metal?
No, it's all graphite, Fred. It's all graphite.
All graphite.
It's just they've gotten a lot more sophisticated in how they wrap or weave the graphite fibers. And, you know, they use just real high modulus shafts. They're not inexpensive. You know, these super light shafts, they can, on a wholesale basis, they can run up to, you know, over $125 or $30. That would be like my cost on some of these super light models. So it's not inexpensive, but the benefits are there for many, many golfers. I mean, if you're swinging 105 or 110 miles an hour and you're used to using you know, extra stiff shafts or even, you know, stiff shafts, it may not be right for you. But anybody, any golfer who swings shafts that are regular flex or senior flex, they ought to give Super Light technology a try.
That's a great piece of advice. Tom LeShon, in our conversation a few weeks back, talked about these $500 shafts are a bunch of hooey. He says that it's more like people think that if they spend a lot of money, they're getting something for it. But really, you don't have to spend that much money on a shaft. And I don't think he was referring
to... He's absolutely right. Once you get to, what happens, Fred, is golfers tend to be lemmings. That's why the industry is as upside down as it is. That's why, earlier we were talking about where all the money is going is into marketing. It's people see Tiger using a certain shaft because they painted a bright color and you can see it on TV. And everyone thinks, well, hey, I got to go out and get that shaft. Well, the shaft manufacturers, they're not fools. They know, they're giving the pros all those great shafts for free. But the cost in the cost difference between a $50-$60 shaft and one that costs me $125 is not the $75. It doesn't cost $75 more to make these super exotic shafts. It's a real marketing game, and I really think that golfers that are out there spending $300 for reshafts or more, $400 for some of these shafts, they're just throwing their money away. I mean, they are buying an image, and for the most part, golfers will not be able to tell any difference between a shaft that costs $50-$75 and one that costs $300.
That's an awesome piece of advice. Thank you.
It's true. It's just true. There are a lot of fancy shafts that the tour players are using, and people think, well, gee, I've got to have that shaft. And you talk to people and say, oh no, I can tell a difference. I put in this certain shaft; it cost me $400, and I'm hitting my driver 30 yards further. Well, believe me, if that was true, the USGA would be all over it, telling you that the product is non-conforming. I just love all these advertising claims. We've lowered the CG, we've done this, and you pick up extra yardage and da-da-da. You know what? When the USGA is regulating the CT, which is the characteristic of time, or in the old days we used to call it the COR, and the difference between a hot club, a hot face, and one that was right at the limit might be 5 to 7 yards, all these claims about, I've done this and we've done this to the club head and we've done this with the shaft and you're picking up 20, 30 yards, that's all a bunch of baloney. It's all marketing hype.
Wow. When you were talking a few minutes ago about the wedges and the faces of the wedges and how they wear out and they need to be replaced unless you buy a Bobby Jones wedge, you mentioned the hybrids. And are you saying, please correct me because I need to get this straight, are you saying that the faces of the hybrids wear out as rapidly? I don't know if you use the word rapidly, but faster than an iron on the same type of scale as wedges?
No, not even close.
When you've got
hybrids, you're usually hitting them off the fairway. Yeah, you hit hybrids out of some trouble, but the face angle of hybrids, you've got 18, 20, 22. We go up to 35, but that's a big difference from a wedge when you're talking about 52, 56, 60 degrees in face angle. The more angle or more loft that a club has, the more friction it creates with the ball. Obviously, a 9-degree driver, there's not much friction. In fact, many drivers on the market don't even have score lines anymore because you don't really want the spin on the driver. You want the ball to kind of knuckle out there, come off the face with very low spin, but a nice high trajectory. That's how you get distance. A wedge, you has a lot more loft, and therefore the ball is spinning off it or grabbing more. There's more friction or resistance the more loft you have on a club. So, you know, the face is wearing out is not an issue at all with drivers, fairway woods, or even hybrids. But it does become an issue probably when you start getting to about a 9 iron, you know, something in that 40. Once you start getting to around 42, 45 degrees of face angle, then wear does become a factor.
Oh, good. I'm glad, because I personally love my Bobby Jones hybrids. I remember
you won't wear out the faces, Fred, of the hybrids. Don't worry about that.
No, and I'll remember that my 3 hybrid that you when I lost my golf clubs and you said, "Come on down, we'll get you some golf clubs." But you said, "Here, this is you could tell people this is your 3 hybrid, but it's actually a 4." You said it just gives you a little more loft. You'll get it up in the air a lot better. And you were right.
Yeah, you know, I say the same thing about fairway woods, too. You know, I think fairway woods is a category that is really overlooked, Fred. People are always focused on their drivers. You know, I got to score better, and I just can't reach the par fours. I need a driver that goes further. You know, there's only so much that we can do. You know, ball velocity is regulated by the USGA off a driver. A lot of golfers should really be thinking about their second shot before they even tee off on a hole.
Here, here.
You know, you're only going to get so much distance out of a driver. If you're having trouble reaching, you know, if you still have to hit 2 full fairway woods to get to a par 5 after your drive with your driver, if you still have to get, you know, still have to use a full 3 wood to get to a long par four, your problem may not necessarily be your driver, because you've probably maxed out or close to maxed out your distance with the driver. You know, fairway woods have become so forgotten in this industry because it's like, oh, everything's driver and then everything's hybrids and wedges. But the fairway woods are probably the most important clubs in your bag because they set up the rest of your bag configuration, the rest of your set configuration. And a lot of golfers can't hit 3 woods. They can't get them airborne because, well, they're only 15 degrees loft or 13 degrees loft. In the old days, Fred, a fairway wood, a 3 wood used to be 17 degrees in the old wood days. And I think a lot of golfers are hurting themselves by using 3 woods that don't have enough loft. And to get to kind of how we started on this question was, you know, we make a fairway wood that's a little shallower, a little smaller, and it's really like a true 4 wood. And it doesn't have a number on it, it just has the degrees, but it's 17 degrees. And I think a lot of your members, a lot of your listeners, if they've got trouble reaching these longer holes, it may not be your driver that's the problem. The problem may be that you're not getting enough distance from your fairway wood. And wow. And if you go with a little bit more loft, it'll be more forgiving. The ball will stay in the air longer, and the ball always goes further in the air than it does once it hits the ground. And just because, you know, a 3 wood is 15 degrees doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to hit that club further than one that has 17 degrees. It's all about making solid contact, getting the ball in the air, and keeping it in the air a long time. And I think a lot of golfers would benefit by getting rid of their 3 woods and going to like a 3.5 or 4 wood, which is about 17 degrees, and I think they'll pick up distance, and they're going to get a lot closer on their second shots on these par 5s so that they have, you know, a medium iron or so into the greens. Because I know that, you know, golfers struggle with distance. The golf courses seem to be getting longer. They're more manicured, so the ball doesn't roll as much. And I just think it's important for golfers to not overlook the importance of a good fairway wood in their games. really. I think it's that's an important factor.
Well, of course we're going to make these mistakes because we think that, you know, there's more loft on a 6-iron than a 5-iron, and we're going to hit the 5-iron farther than the 6-iron. So, I mean, we're going to translate that into our hybrids and our fairway woods. So I think that's where maybe that mistake would come in. But I know...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, Fred, it's kind of what Tom was talking about before, you know, with Sean. It's, yeah, everyone thinks, well, gee, I've got a longer shaft and I got less loft, more, you know, stronger loft. I've got to hit it further. But that makes one huge assumption. The assumption is that you're going to hit the ball in the middle of the face consistently. And if that was the case, then you would be right. Yes, a longer shaft with less loft, if you put it in the hands of the robot and it hit, it's going to hit further than a 17 degree. But there are a lot of factors involved. What's the lie? You know, what kind of course are you playing? You know, are the lies pretty tight or are they fluffy? You know, it's better to make solid contact than to have a club that in theory you can hit further, but you're only going to do that 2 or 3 times out of 20 swings. Why not go get a club that's a little shorter, has a little bit extra loft, and you'll make more solid contact? And at the end of the day, I think your members, they should try it out themselves. Go out to the driving range and take a 15-degree 3-wood, you know, maybe the one that you got in your bag, and then go try out like a little 3.5 or 4-wood that's 17 degrees. And go out to the range and hit them and see how far they go. Where do they go? Where do they land? And I'll bet they will be shocked that out of 20 hits, they're going to get much better results with the 17-degree fairway wood than they would with the 15 or 13-degree 3-wood that they think would go further. They might catch it once or twice out of 20 shots. It'll go further. But what about the rest of the 18 shots? You're probably better off at the 17.
I know one of the things that I like to talk about is strategy, and as you talked about, is you should be thinking more on your second shot than just hitting it off the deck or off the tee. And that,
right.
You know, if someone, I played recently and there was a short par 4. And whenever there's a short par 4, that means the fairway is going to be a more difficult hole. They're going to make the fairway much more narrow than on a big
right.
fairway on a long hole. They're going to challenge you in ways that they wouldn't on a long par 4. They're just trying to, you know, like on a long par 4, they're going to put bunkers in front of the green, so if you don't reach it, you're in trouble, that kind of stuff. And
right.
so what I like to do on these shorter par 4s, and again, I'm playing with these Bobby Jones clubs that you made for me, I love to pull out my 3-wood because I have, whether I hit it farther than my driver or not, which I generally don't, sometimes I hit them the same distance, but I know I can get more accuracy with my 3-wood. And I'd rather go ahead and leave myself a 125-yard shot for my second shot than a 60-yard shot for my second shot. I'm more confident in that 125-yard shot with my 9-iron. And so give me the chance to put it in the fairway and you know, right in the middle and set me up for a great second shot, or even on a par 5, set me up for that final approach shot. And so I will pull out my 3-wood. When people look at me like, what are you doing? It's like, I'm sorry, I don't always pull a driver out on the tee.
Well, you're using good course management. I mean, for most of us...
We call that golf smarter.
Golf smarter. There you go, golf smarter. You know, it that makes a lot of sense, but most of us don't think that when we get out in the heat of the competition or playing. You know, you're always conditioned to hit the ball as far as you can because you want to get the ball on every shot. You want to get it as close to the hole as possible. And obviously, gee, if I hit my driver 250 yards off the tee, that's a lot better than hitting a shot that's only going, 220 yards. But it's most of us miss more fairways than we realize. And that's the smart thing to do, is get the ball in play, because at the end of the day, Fred, for most of us that are just average handicappers, there isn't a heck of a lot of difference between hitting a 7 or 8 iron versus hitting a 9 iron or a pitching wedge. You know, the 1 or 2 clubs closer that you get, you know, from an iron standpoint, that doesn't that's too much of a risk if your drive doesn't hit the fairway. You've got, you know, like they say, it's tough to make par from the trees, and you've got to keep the ball in play. I was just in a, I play every year with some friends of mine up in the Lake Tahoe area the week after Labor Day, and you know, I hadn't been playing at all. You know, I can go 4 months without playing golf. Remarkably, people don't believe that, but it's
true. No, you're a golf professional. Golf professionals never get to play.
Yeah, sure. But you know, I didn't take out my driver in 3 days that we played up there.
Wow.
And I hit almost every fairway. I scored pretty well. You know, still it's tough chipping and putting when you don't play very often, but I was in every hole. I was never, you know, in any real big trouble hitting a three wood off every hole. Now, granted, we are up in elevation up there, so I hit the ball pretty well with the three wood. But again, you got to stay in play. And on these, you know, again, that the importance of a good fairway wood is, you know, I just can't underestimate how important that is. In fact, on the tour, probably the oldest club in any tour player's bag will be their fairway wood. Because once a tour player finds that fairway wood, that three wood that they can look down on, and it looks, you know, looks like a nice old worn pair of slippers. They know how it's going to feel. They know how they're going to react. They remember all the great shots they've hit with that fairway wood. Once they find a fairway wood that really works for them, that club stays in the bag for years. They'll change drivers every season. They're changing wedges every 2-3 weeks. They may change irons every year or every other year. But that fairway wood in a tour player's bag, you take a look at some of the fairway woods that are out on tour, and they are at least 5, 6, they might even be 10 years old.
Wow.
They're not the new models of the companies that they're endorsing. In fact, there are still quite a few Champions Tour players that have my old tri-metals in the bag, and that tells you something, that it they've got fairway woods that are in the bag that are about 13 years old. So it's impossible to overstate the importance of a good fairway wood.
Well, and all they do is change the shafts and the grips, right?
Yeah. Well, a lot of them don't even change the shafts, but the grips. Everyone should be changing their grips once a year. I mean, I get people who would, you know, they'll send back the club and say, you know, Jesse, can you check out this club? I'm not hitting really well. Well, I look and the grip is completely gone. It's slick like ice. Sometimes
the edges are cracked.
Just have holes. They have holes in the grip. Because I've seen them where the thumbprints on the grip have worn right down to the shaft.
Oh, that's funny.
It just doesn't make sense. You know, so a golfer won't invest. It's crazy. They don't invest in a new set of grips, which can really help their game, but they're out looking to spend $350 or $400 on a new driver. You know, hey, it may not be the driver. It may be just your grip. You know, invest a little money and keep your clubs in good shape.
Jesse, thank you so much for this education once again. You always have these pearls that just make me shake my head going, oh, but of course. It's so great to talk to you.
You say, Fred, that what you're really saying is that I'm the master of stating the obvious, right?
Well, it's better than the reputation I have in my house, which is an astute command of the inappropriate.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. All right.
Well, thanks for having me on again.
Oh, of course. And Bobby Jones Golf at BobbyJonesGolf.com?
That's right.
And, you know, that time you came out with us in Marin County and played at Peacock Gap, I know a lot of the listeners that were there that day have since purchased Bobby Jones drivers and fairway woods and love them. I know they contacted you and were...
I've been fortunate, Fred, that I have a big following of golf aficionados that always, you know, drop me emails and stuff, and from really all over the country, all over the world, and I'm very fortunate that people believe in my clubs, and I love hearing the stories of how they enjoy the clubs and how much enjoyment they're getting out of the clubs, and it's very rewarding, very fulfilling. That what I do is bring in, you know, a lot of happiness to golfers all over. So you know, again, I don't take it for granted. A lot of people are shocked when they call at the shop and they ask for me, and they can actually get me. It blows them away, you
yep,
know, that they can actually get me on the phone. But that's what I do, Fred. You know, just like we're talking here, that's what I do, and I'm happy to field any kind of questions and give out advice, how you know, what golfers should be putting in their bags, and it may not necessarily be my clubs. I kind of tell it like it is. So if
well,
I
listen,
can help someone, that's
if
great.
Anybody in the audience wants to give Jesse a call, just make sure that you let him know that you are a Golf Smarter listener, and he'll treat you with a little more love. And listen, if you and I had another hour to speak, I would be doing all the talking about my Bobby Jones clubs that you put together for me. I'm telling you. So, thanks again, Jesse.
Well,
awesome.
I'm glad they're still working for you, Fred.
Actually, somebody shoved a hybrid in my bag. Said, "Yeah, I've got. Why don't you go take this out? Why don't you hit it?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, sure, I'll do it." I hit it on the driving range. I pulled out my Bobby Jones hybrid, was a 3. I pulled it out in the car, swapped in that one, hit it on the driving range, hated it, then got to the golf course, and I came to a shot where I'm like, okay, I should be hitting my hybrid here, but I'm not going to pull that club out. No, there's no way, because I didn't have the club that you made for me. So, yeah.
Well, it's you know, I think many people are very surprised to learn that not all the clubs are created equally. And, you know, just because you have a bad experience, a lot of people have bad experiences with hybrids because they kind of smother hook them or they can't hit them out of the rough. But, you know, try them all. Try mine, but try and compare. And, you know, I think you'll be surprised that there are differences between the brands. There really are.
Okay, Golf Smarter members, I'm talking to you. I really am curious. How long have you been listening to the Golf Smarter podcast? And more importantly, what have you taken away from it? What was either the best episode you heard, the best guest you heard, or the greatest tip that you received? I need to know. Just click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.